Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. How you doing there, dump truck?
There's no dump truck here today, just JCR.
Oh, JCR is joining us this week. JCR, how are you?
Great. So dump truck is out because he's visiting the Quake doctor, and he's getting his knees checked from too much bunny hopping.
His Quake dad knees?
Indeed.
Oh, boy. Yeah, way too much bunny hopping for that guy. That's for damn sure. But today on the show, we are talking to MFX. Now, MFX is kind of sort of a legend in the mapping community, right?
He is a mapping legend. Today, we'll be talking to him about some of his key contributions to the community and where it all started.
We're also going to jump in and talk about some of the, I guess we could call them legendary packs at this point, like Rubicon Rumble Pack and Arcane Dimensions.
Basically, my story is as anyone else's. Like, I played, Duke Nukem, Doom, at an early age. All those LucasArts games were very, very funny.
Yeah.
But when we first loaded up Quake, everything changed. Basically, it was, a big wow effect to actually being able to walk around the monsters and look up and down and being able to actually mod the game. Yeah, pretty mind-blowing stuff.
Yeah, kind of blew your mind, I guess, back then.
Of course, yeah. Still does.
Yeah, the stuff that people come out with nowadays definitely blows my mind for sure, just seeing where it used to be and where it is now.
Course.
So did you discover Quake back in the 90s, or was this after the fact?
Oh, I'm born in 1980, and my first contact with computers was way back in the German Democratic Republic. I grew up in the GR. Those were like old hardware, Robotron. And basically the games they played back then were very, very basic stuff like Wings of Fury and such. As a, really nothing worthwhile. The first real gaming computer was a Commodore C64, I guess.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the first PC I got in 93. It was a Intel 368, I guess, yeah. Yeah. After that, I got a Pentium in 96, I think. Yeah, and as I said, I was never actually an avid player, like, was more like a sports guy, you know, and we had, back in school, we did a lot of coding, actually, in classes.
Okay, yeah. Programming,
coding, yeah, Turbo Pascal and stuff like C. And as soon as Quake was out, because the Quake C is such no big, it is different from C in obvious ways, but we kind of could immediately start to hack the QC, which was kind of mind-blowing, yeah. So, for example, we did write a mod for co-op, but it was played on one monitor with one keyboard. I know it sounds weird. Basically, the one player had to be in front of the other to actually look and see what he's doing. Yeah, it was 5 minutes fun, and afterwards we went on. There were like, you know the bots, the early bots, the Reaper bots that came out? Like,
yeah.
We fill it around with this for a while, trying to understand how all the war code and detection code worked. Yeah.
So a lot of early tinkering.
it was tinkering in the end, yeah. Just getting to know the stuff. And I kind of remember my earliest level editor was, I think, Cool. Was called Cool, or was it BSP? There were two level editors. I think it's Neo. No, it was Thread, I think. Thread. Called Thread, I think. No textures in the viewports, and very slow in the end. And yeah, I started basically in 97 making maps. Those works are, of course, all lost. Made the obligatory house map. I went around our house with a ruler and measured all walls, the wall thickness, and tried to convert. Yeah, wow. tried to convert those measurements into units in the end. So, yeah, I don't know. 1 pixel is maybe like 3 centimeters. We figured out like the player's height is 56 pixels, I guess. So yeah, times 3. Yeah, you have 1 meter 60. Basically, yeah. This was like yeah. But we
that's keeping in mind the Quake guy's height, right? Because he's supposed to be a mini little guy, right?
Yeah. Soon realized that. All those proportions concerning height and all that are way off in Quake. Like those monitors you see are huge. These are like human-sized monitors and stuff. But yeah.
So it's just based on like I just finished playing some of your older maps just to get reacquainted with your work and. You're explaining how you measured your house and stuff to get the proportions. I'm wondering if that carried over into your later work in terms of your use of space. Because one thing I noticed across all of your maps is a really good use of space. Oh, just a curious observation.
No, thanks. I don't know how to answer this question, actually. I just think... you have the good spatial imagination to make this kind of stuff. Like, yeah, because yeah, Doom basically could all layouts could be on put on paper, but with overlapping walkways and stuff, it couldn't be managed anymore to make a real 2D layout in Quake. But yeah, I was always interested in architecture, and always, still today, I'm keeping my eyes open to just look around how people built this stuff in the old days. Especially when I see a chapel, I have to always look around for some weird, like how they put the bricks together, and all the time you can find like imperfection stuff.
Oh sure, yeah.
It's way more prevalent in the real world than in the game world. Most stuff is very perfect. All is angled in perfect sizes, and even the breakables behave. It's all right angles. I was always kind of into this immersion stuff. Like if you open a map and the first sight you see. It's a hit or win situation. Like you can win a player in the first 3 seconds, or he closes the map when he thinks, oh, this looks shit. So yeah, I'm always a fan of the maps from Zan, from Andrew Palmer. I think they mm-hmm. they transport kind of this reality I want to create myself. Like those environments he made always felt very, very convincing to me. Same with these CZG stuff.
So would you say with your designs nowadays, you try to add in that sort of human element, that like sort of, like you said, not so perfect architecture type of feel to it?
I would, but this is probably the hardest thing to do. It's in the end, these BSP editing stuff is very limited, and yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's actually fun to try to do this.
So you started mapping all the way back in the 90s, and you said that you lost a lot of those maps, if not all of them. What happened? Was it just lost to time or a hard drive? Or
actually, those weren't any finished works. Like, I was just trying to find my way around, like, maybe how to wrap textures, how to align them on angled on angled faces and stuff. Very basic stuff. Nowadays, it's like after 5 minutes of watching dump trucks tutorials, anybody can open up trench broom and do something. Back then, you had to guesswork, and most the old editors weren't even capable of like stretching textures or skewing them or giving them an angle. One editor was like very weird. It had a 10 unit grid, like not the binary grid we all used to, but like 10 units. I don't know what it was. It was very weird, and because all the textures are like in binary sizes, it was nearly impossible to make anything that looked good. Like, you had to basically touch every brush four
and
times.
These are things that I feel like. These are things that the modern mappers, such as myself, take for granted.
Yeah, of course.
Now
yeah.
The tool is already, you know, it pretty much does it for you.
Yeah, back then you had to adjust the texture, compile again, open the game, look at this one texture you just made. Okay, next step, back to the other texture, compile again, look at the texture. Okay, and this was very, very, very annoying in the end, but. It's soon weird. Yeah, time consuming, and the excitation is soon weird off. Like, and when you go to Codicted and look at the maps released in 96, 97, I think most mappers struggle with those limits. Nobody had a next workstation like Carmack had, like where the in-house editor already had a 3D viewport. Those editors made for the community back then were very basic stuff. Like, yeah.
So let me make sure I understood you correctly. You're saying the mapping tools that you worked with back then did not have a 3D viewing port at all.
They did have a viewing port, but this was limited to wireframe.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and you know when wireframe isn't culled, like it's a total mess.
Right, right. You can't
looking
look
at
this stuff.
Yeah, it's a total mess to look at it. So.
That really puts things in perspective, because the majority of the work that's done now, in like Trench Broom, for example, is in the 3D viewing port.
Yeah.
To the point where like the 2D views are, you don't even have them. You minimize them or just turn them off completely.
Yeah. As Sleepwalker said, his goal was to put Quake into a modern environment, like make 3D editing really fast, really snappy, and I think he did a great job.
Agreed.
Yeah, it's awesome what he has done here.
I'd like to ask far as the work that you have on Quidicted, for example.
Yeah.
What tool did you use to make those?
Oh, the first
like your earlier maps, like Clean Cut.
Yeah. So basically, I was moving house and I found an old Quake CD back in 2010, I guess. Loaded it up and looked around and it was like, oh, cool. And then after some Googling, I found the message board and. Looking around what people were using to make maps, and started to try out the GTK, Radiant editor, or I don't know how it's called, Hammer back then, I don't know. And yeah, of course, the notorious Quark.
Right.
Yeah. I ended up using Quark for the first maps I made. It's a usability nightmare, I know. but it has some advantages, which even the newer editors don't actually have. Like, yeah, it's too many things to mention in the end. But I'm very handy in it, and I Yeah, it still find my way. You can make maps easily with this one.
Could you give maybe one example of an advantage you could think of?
For example, you don't like the rock texture anymore and you want to change all textures in a map. You could open it in Notepad Plus, for example, and just make it a search and replace. But you can also do this in any editor. Just select all by name and change them to another texture you want. Like, and with 1,000 faces, doing this by hand would be the boringest job ever. So, and this is, for example, it's very powerful when you use those tools. And there are like Archmakers, makers for staircases. You can build a radial stuff, and even instancing works. Like you have one model. And you just copy it, paste it around in an app, and for example, an arch, and you just change one model, and all arches in the map are changed accordingly. So it's very helpful to, yeah.
It's like, not like prefabs, but if you take something that's already
built, you make a prefab, and you only copy the instance of it. Like, and for example, platforms or arches, windows, doors. You change one, and all of these entities, all of these B models in the map are changed too.
So,
yeah,
that's really cool. Moving on from the 90s era, you mentioned that you made a house map, and you had some other maps that were not really complete, and then it seems like you took kind of a long break from doing at least Quake mapping, until 2010. So were you still gaming in that time? Still creating maps for another game? What were you doing?
Yeah, the first other level editor was for Far Cry. And this was a whole other dimension of complexity. I don't know if I opened the editor in Far Cry. I was blown away.
It's quite a leap forward from 90s era tools.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just brave and thought, hey, I made this with Quake. Let's see how this works. And it was okay. I immediately closed it after 5 minutes clicking around and not doing anything. So basically that was the last one after took a break from computers. Like I told you, I haven't owned a computer for like 5 years after this.
Oh wow!
Yeah, it was.
I'm curious. What were you doing in that time frame? You're hiking, like seeing the world.
Working, pretty much moving often, changing my locations, just getting to know Germany. Yeah, mm-hmm. I never wanted to stay in my place in the first. As soon as this school was finished, I left, and never went back. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I got you. Yeah, everybody, you're not alone. Like, everybody has that mentality of, like, I have to move out of whatever place I was born so that way, I can experience the world and see things. And yeah, so you're definitely not alone.
Yeah, this is definitely not the time to a map for Quake when you're, like, when you...
And it's important to do that, too. There I always say
to see, yeah.
Yes, exactly. And it's important to get away from the computer monitor and go see nature and people and stuff like
gather
that.
Some
yeah,
sun.
Yeah. GCR knows all about that in Florida for sure.
Indeed. Oh yeah.
So you came back in 2010 though. So between 2010 and 2013, you didn't release anything. 2013 was your first release with Clean Cut. Were you just sort of like experimenting and seeing what you could build with it, or what were you doing in that 3 years there before the first release?
Well, CleanCut's file name is SP8. And yeah, the seven maps before this one weren't either good enough or finished. So, I have all those maps finally found on an old hard drive, but just played them, and they are really bad. The other, the only exception is like MFX SP5, the Klein bottle map.
Okay.
After
it's funny, I saw the README said that those maps were lost to the void, so I guess they weren't lost to the void; they were just tucked away somewhere in the void.
They were tucked away in the end, yeah. I had forgotten about the hard drive, and yeah.
Termination Mental was another one that you released not long after Clean Cut, it seems. And that one was quite nice.
Oh, this is the remix of E3M1, I think.
Yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to work with those textures and make some kind of environments that are actually believable. Still sci-fi, but yeah, getting like a kind of realistic touch to it. And I always liked the layout of E3M1, like the loop. So yeah, I made my own interpretation of it. But this was kind of a learning process. I made very many mistakes back then. Like, I didn't know how to make proper windows. I did this with water volumes, and you had to adjust your engine to actually display the windows as I intended.
That's what that was about. Okay.
Only later I found out. Okay, you can use funk walls and attach an alpha value, and that's it. Yeah. And I don't know, the old compilers from Bank Gyrop, the QBSP, they're throwing so many errors and making so many like hom effects, missing faces and stuff, or taking endless times to compile. So I got in contact with a coder named Rap, very talented coder I met. Mm-hmm. He wrote his own versions of the tools, which I still use to this day. Never had a problem with them. Wow. Yeah. Oh. He implemented funk detail stuff, and yeah, you can adjust like the, I don't know how it's called, the splitting algorithm to make better BSP files, more optimized files for the game.
Fascinating.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Nowadays, I was always like, back then you couldn't play an unvised map, like, or you had a VC rig. Like, you did. Nowadays, the computers are so fast. I can't feel a difference between a vised map or unvised map.
Yeah.
At least right. For my maps, I think a Tronin map or something like what Tronin does is another story. So I don't know how Tronin does wise his maps at all in the end. Yeah, sacrifices something, I think.
Well, when you came back in 2013 with Clean Cut, though, you seemed to become like almost a mapping machine, because just looking at your releases, you came out with several of them.
Yeah, because
just within the
I had a huge backlog of files I made. And once you have those backlog, and you can pick one out and like polish it and throw it out. Okay, so yeah, I made. It took me 3 years to release 3 maps in the end. Yeah, and 15 maps were not so.
I gotcha, but it's as if though after that though you continued to keep releasing pretty high quality stuff, even to the point where, the funk map jam stuff was starting, and you got involved with that, and you eventually released your Rubicon Rumble Pack, right?
It's not mine. It's it's iJet's work in the end. Yeah, back then I met a new girl, and I didn't have many duties to fulfill. I had much free time on my hand.
Okay.
So I used this to map quite a bit. And my girl back then, she was an architect. So we always like had some insights to share. Like I showed her the stuff and she was like, "Oh, this looks not nice. Better do this way. And she had a library of reference photos, like many, many books. And this is like, yeah, it's always good to have a reference point. You can compare or you can lean your work on, for example.
Oh yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, having books you could go back to, or even having a girlfriend or boyfriend that you could just bounce things off of that actually cares is
yeah, of course, kind of a big this helped win, helped, really. Helped yeah. a lot. Really helped a lot. Yeah, but yeah, I was mapping quite extensively, so like for 10 to 12 hours per day. And oh, wow. when I went to bed, I started the vising process, like. Yeah, and waking up and looking at the vice map, finding errors, and back into mapping. Like so this went on for like 2 years. And wow. I mean, the Rubicon Rumble pack is like, those are huge maps, and I can't recommend anyone to try his hands on such huge map for the first time. It took quite a while to get all those things right. Yeah, and. Thanks to Rap, he ripped his leg off for this too, in the end, yeah.
So how did that come about? You, obviously, you said you know it's not completely your pack, but you did contribute to it. So how did you get involved with that?
Oh, I just found my mail and he liked my maps in the end, and we wrote back and forth, and he just he showed me some stuff he was working on. And I was immediately like, oh, that's a nice idea. The telefragging stuff, like you have no legs and you just crawl through those environments. Yeah, I was pretty pumped. And I always liked the Rubicon texture set. It's mm-hmm. one of my favorite sets to work with. And the mod by Metal Slime and CCG as well. It's a fantastic mod. Those Floyds and I don't know, the Sentinels. Yeah, pretty high quality stuff. So when I got the opportunity to work with him, yeah, I immediately said, yeah, let's make some stuff. So I made the start map. I just read on Quadratic, the start map is way too convoluted and way too huge to work as a start map. But I think it's quite quite a it's defines the place and the setting.
So, I was about to say, that's exactly right. That's exactly yeah. the feeling I got from that.
Because the three maps by Peter and IJet and me are like, they're all giant maps, and why not make the start map a little bit more convoluted than usual? So you have to really find the entrances to the map. Yeah. Back then I liked the idea, but now, yeah, I'm kind of torn because... It's a bit the start map would work better in the end if it was a single player map, I think, yeah. But yeah, it is what it is.
One way or another, it's an invitation for the player to explore.
Yeah.
And to see, you know, all the little crevices and neat little things going on inside of it.
This is what I actually enjoy quite with Quake, exploring the spaces, like, yeah. So I followed my taste.
No, that's cool. And to be honest, I mean, Rubicon Rumble Pack is rated pretty high. So, I mean, if that's your biggest, you know, takeaway from it is that maybe my start map is a little convoluted. I don't think a lot of Quakers care all that much.
No. The feedback for the start map was like 99% was like they were blown away. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how is it rated. I don't give I don't really care about those ratings on Quadratic because yeah, everybody can log in and.
Well, and I mean, even some of the highest rated maps are still have negative reviews.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, there was a misaligned texture here. I give it a 0 out of 10.
You yeah,
so you gotta of course, take it with a grain of salt.
I had a bad day. Have a 1-star review.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's I don't know, but yeah, you have to deal with it in the end.
That's true. Well, I mentioned that just because the lowest rating that Rubicon seems to have on Quidicted is a 3. So that's a win in my opinion.
Oh, so, really? Yeah. Good. Let me check. All right. Yeah. What I'm a bit pissed off is like the other mod I made with Sock is like was downvoted, but yeah, I don't care about the ratings. The Arcane Dimensions mods, all these releases were pretty heavily downvoted. I don't know who does this or which person I pissed off.
Somebody with an axe to grind.
Yeah.
Yeah, more than likely.
So this is a perfect segue into the next question I wanted to ask you, and that's your work with Sock. Tell us about Arcane Dimensions.
Let's talk about the gems first, I think.
Because, okay, yeah, sorry. We're eager to jump ahead.
Yeah.
JCR is like, ooh, I got to talk about AD. Totally. But yeah, talk about the jams for sure. You started with the honey theme, right?
So I was chatting at the time with Sock already. And yeah, he liked my maps and he wrote some nice stuff about the Klein Bottle map. And he was always like nitpicking and stuff like, you have to improve there, improve this. And yeah, knowing Sock's maps, he's one of my favorite mappers, maybe the favorite. He's like a perfectionist, if there is one. And of course, I felt very honored to just be recognized by him. And so I tried to make a honey map, but I was still working on RRP. I couldn't dance on all weddings, like, yeah. But I don't know if it was on Funk Message Board. In the end, INS had a problem with compiling, and I was like, okay, send me the map. I can take a look at it. And in the end, it was a very stupid mistake. It was like some ammo boxes were reaching into a wall. That's why you had a leak there. Mm. Yeah, and the map file he gave me was like the cleanest map file I have ever seen. Ionis is like, yeah, really, really titty when he's doing his stuff. And it was really mind-opening to see how titty he did this. And mm-hmm. So I asked him if I can fiddle with the light. I had a new light compiler and maybe add a new area so we can make a team effort map. And he was fine with that. Yeah, and it took me like 3 days to finish his map. And yeah, and in the end, it worked quite nice. I still like this probable carcinogen, it's called. It's still one of my favorite maps. I like the mood, the setting is very, very nice. So, yeah.
You know, we're just coming off of SM199, which was the collaborative speed map pack. So, at least in my mind, I know a couple of others who participated, the challenge that comes with working with someone else, even if it's just one other person, it's quite high when it comes to this sort of thing. You really have to be in sync with the other person in order to...
Yeah, I think best is if you like you have one guy who's fluent with brushwork and the other guy is fluent in making enemy and combat setups. This is the perfect combination. So one guy doesn't have to worry about how it looks and the other guy doesn't have to worry about how it plays. And when you get the chance and combine those to make a map, yeah, those works are of course better than yeah, especially for speed maps, better than a map a single person could finish. Like, I haven't played those maps now, 199, but I will do later.
Yeah, may I suggest? Yep. Play my map with new house.
Of course, yeah, yeah.
It's great.
Little self-plug
yeah,
there.
Yeah, shameless.
That's okay. I'll self-plug myself, too, because I believe the Honey Jam pack might be the only pack that me and MFX actually share a map in of the
Oh yeah, you did a map. Yeah, I know. Your map was quite nice. Yeah. It's sad you didn't like follow this, but in the end, yeah.
Well, thank you. Yes, I'm not sure I could accept the compliment because I look back on it going, ugh.
Yeah, of course. I have the same feeling when I look back to my old maps. Like every corner, you could. This and especially combat setups, those were not always my favorite to set up and but you have to let go and say okay, it's finished, else it's a never ending story. Like
hindsight's 20/20,
of course.
You look back after you see, you know, you get several demos of someone playing your map, or you know, many people playing your map, and they run into the same problem. It's like, oh, I could have fixed that, but you know, it's like plugging the leaks in a boat that has millions of holes in it. There's always going to be something.
Yeah, that's the point of having good beta testers, and not in the end not burning them. Like you have one shot at giving them a try at your map. Like once they know it, it's gone. So so not to. Best is not to send in like unfinished or you know work where still a lot of work has to be done. Not send this around to take people to have a look, because you can do this once, twice. The third time nobody will ever look at it and says like, oh, I can't. And I did this error actually a lot. I had very forgiving beta testers with RRP. OTP was one of them. OTP was like he played the maps even unvised, I think. Very, yeah, but he struggled through. yeah, but especially with those giant maps, like you don't want to play this at like 10 times. It's, nobody does this. So yeah, better prepare for just one shot, one perfect shot at beta testing. And if you have some guys at hand, I like, community is always helpful in that regard. Yeah, you stick to them, like always kind of you could, not all suggestions are up your alley, but I always try to follow their suggestions. Yeah,
that's good. Yeah, I feel like that's one of the key things to do, is to definitely follow people's suggestions when you're mapping, because even though there might be a little ego involved with, you know, I could do this. I could do this without anybody's help. It definitely pays to have somebody else's opinion, you know, and take it.
Well,
you
know? Ego aside, I mean, for example, Sock gave me unlimited, like a huge amount of advice when it comes to lighting a map, to put lights. Mm-hmm. And still to this day, I follow his basic mantra, brick symmetry. Create like spots where you can focus the player on, like, and yeah, with this you can guide the player just with lights. Like you don't have to do any texture work, just by lighting a map properly you can guide the player in the end. And this is all I know in this regard is from Sock. So yeah, and everyone who is eager to make a map should maybe play one or two of his maps to get a sense of what I mean. Yeah
No, it's true. Sock is very, very talented. Hopefully we'll have him on the show someday, wink wink. But regardless, you did a lot of work in AD. Like I'm looking at the list of maps you created for it, and you have 1, 2, 3, 4, is it 4 maps?
Well, I did the big swampy map.
Yep.
This was a new creation, and yeah, the Crucial Error is just a revamped version of an older map, like the Mainframe Mayhem, what's it called? Yeah, I made it. This was a crook.
It's a great little map.
Cross map. I made it's yeah. No, I nowadays I think it's very boring. It's very empty. It's not no spectacular combat. So yeah, went back and changed this. Pretty much remade every brush in 480.
Wow. Yeah,
added extra areas and so. Another map I made was, one test map, which shouldn't be a test map at all because, it's a proper map, I think, but it was to show off the rotation stuff and,
Well, I think most of the work that you created for AD is really good, really top tier. But the one that I and obviously JCR can jump in here after I ask this question and talk about the ones that he likes. But I wanted to talk about the Realm of Enceladus.
Yeah. Another map. Another map.
You had a really cool approach with that.
Yeah, but it's another map I revisited. It's the Gem 2 map. And
okay.
Yeah, those gems were always very time restricted, so was a big hassle to even finish this one for the jam. And I don't know, Daz made a, immediately when it came out, Daz made a video of this map, and his main concern was like, okay, we don't have a proper start. The players just dropped here. Okay, so I took this advice and made a proper starting valley. Yeah, and yeah, I'm quite happy with this map as well. Yeah, it's very nice looking.
It's great because you have the, I believe it's the only map in the pack that uses the white theme, right? So,
everything is white. Cucurello made a white theme too. Yeah, but most people, most people combined blue and white or went with the yes. blue theme. I always like the white theme because snow, yeah, it's kind of monotonous, but you can play, you can really highlight with light the architecture. So, yeah, it's what I did.
Oh, totally. And but you also added in the other layer with like the mine shaft, mine cart stuff, right?
Yep.
So how did that all come about? Because that actually is my favorite part of the map because it's so different from the rest of it.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what I wanted to do because just the small temple, these are like two floors and there's not much gameplay in it. You can do some tricky stuff, but I just decided, okay, I need like big inspiration came from Sork was like Indiana Jones, the first movie, like where those minecart ride and stuff. So yeah, I made those big wooden structure, yeah, which loops around in the end back to the main temple. Yeah.
Well, and let me say this about the criticisms of the start for that map. I mean, I remember when I played it the first time, I was floored by the rock work.
Yeah, thanks. And
I don't think it's fair to say that, like, oh, you're just dropped in there. It's like, okay, well, yeah, you're dropped in there because it's a game.
No, like, I
look
I
around,
don't,
look at the amazing rocks.
I don't think Des' intention was to be unfair. The whole map was just for him such a high quality that he. His only nitpick in the end were those I mentioned, like this art or not a proper ending. So yeah, like we said, you can always find something to nitpick about
yes,
in the
indeed.
End. So yeah, this was his nitpick, and I immediately changed it.
Yeah, I find with playing through maps and trying to have some kind of constructive criticism, sometimes it can be really tough, especially with some of you guys out there who are super talented, trying to find something that you could work on. Because sometimes you get to the end of it, you're like, I don't know, this was really good. I guess the start, you know, it's tough to come up with stuff.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. The Daz show back then was very focused on level design. And he, I don't know if you ever watched the video, but Daz has very, very big knowledge and insight into this kind of stuff. And it's always nice to hear from him his view on those maps, and always very helpful in the end to hear his advice. Yeah. But
Yeah, and Daz, for the most part, he's a super nice guy, too. Yeah. So, I mean, if he gives you any kind of criticism, most of the time it's constructive, as long as you're on his good side, I should say. Yeah.
And if you can't handle criticism, yeah. you shouldn't be mapping in the first place, I think.
That's that's a very, very good advice, too.
Yeah.
JCR, did you have another map of MFXs that you wanted to talk about?
Well, I did want to ask him about, what is it, Foggy Bog Bottom, the one he did for AD?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, can you tell us about how you even started construction? You mentioned that this was something you made from scratch for AD. Is that right?
Yeah. After the Gem 3, the Zerstörer Gem was released, Sock was like, okay, this is serious business. MFX is mapping like crazy. We should use this. And I was thinking this too. We should maybe use our talent to create something with a broader and wider like scope in the end. So he showed me some QC he was working on, where he already had the projectile stuff coded and breakables in the end. And always Sucker's the guy, he makes a feature in QC and he always provides a test map. Like, and even the test maps he provided were like super polished. I mean, you know those maps from AD.
Yeah.
Super polished stuff. And I was like, wow. And of course, I was very honored to have him irgendwie acknowledge my work, and working with him was like big honor. And yeah, so we were throwing around ideas back and forth, like how to get inspiration. Like we were exchanging like screenshots of artwork all the time. And he sent me a shot of a wooden structure in a swamp with some brick detail in it. I don't know the artist who made this, and I can't find the picture anymore. But as soon as I saw this picture, I was like, okay, I already had some kind of layout in mind. And the first thing I did with Swampy was like the rock work of the starting area when you exit the cave into the daylight, and you have those like a canyon where the water is located. So I made all this rock work first, and starting adding architecture on top of the rock work. So yeah, but yeah, I soon did the map developed some kind of life for itself, and yeah, I had to finish it, else it would be even bigger. But yeah.
Now that one wasn't a jam or a speed map or anything. How long did you take to make that?
1 year.
Ah, okay.
Or maybe even 14 months, I think. Yeah, 14 months.
Yeah, because I think that one is second biggest only to Sepulchre, right?
Yeah, in terms of monster count, I think yes.
Yeah, because I remember playing that one and I enjoyed it, but I remember getting to the end of it like, wow, I cannot believe how long this map is. It's crazy.
Yeah, the whole church area at the end was added last. It was way shorter back then. And people were already complaining, like I had a Lunarian testing it one day, burning him as a beta tester, and he was like, he was absolutely not satisfied with this. He's like, okay, you have to change so much stuff, and it's already way too big. What are you doing? Don't waste your time on such monster maps. Better create small episode style stuff. Like, this was the advice from Lunarian, and yeah. I didn't follow it. I crunched through. Yeah, in the end, Lunarian liked it as well. But yeah, it was kind of disappointing to hear this from him. Like, I thought you liked it, but it's I heard the complaint quite a lot now. That it's way too long of an experience. If you are keen on finding all secrets, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, it's got a lot of secrets hidden around, you know, very, very much like Forgotten Sepulcher as well. I can't help but combine them because they both have a similar feel to them where there's just like nooks and crannies to explore all over the place, which is really, really cool because to me, I don't think it's so much that it's too long. I think it's just a map created for a different type of player, if that makes sense.
Maybe.
I agree.
Yeah, you have to take your time to enjoy this. Like,
it's the kind of map where you could play it, save, come back, like, you know, after a day or so.
No, you will be totally lost. Like, yeah. I have the same with, like, save games from Sepulcher. Like, okay, I saved this, let's finish this this evening, and I come back and, like, what the fuck? I don't even know where I am. Like, because, it's so big. Either you take the full experience, like, okay, you take your 2 or 3 hours even to finish it properly, or you don't do it. Like, safe games don't work in this regard. Like,
yeah, I was going to say, there you have it. For anybody listening who hasn't played this, from the author himself, don't play it. You know, play it all in one sitting. Don't take a break.
You know, yeah, right.
Advice from the author.
MFX, do you have a preference on whether you like making longer maps or shorter maps? Do you prefer one over the other?
I like them both. For a short blast, of course, like a lunch break. Okay, short map is preferred, but when I'm alone at home and feeling bored, like, yeah, let's play Sepulcher again. I don't prefer one over the other. I like them both. Especially, yeah, cool. Even those giant Tronin episodes. These are better than watching a movie in the end. For me, like, yeah, the, how it's called, Indian Summer, for example.
Yeah.
Or the other one he made with Pulsar. Something
you can get lost in those.
Yeah, totally awesome is what he created. Yeah.
So what do you take away from your experience doing AD stuff? Because AD was definitely, in my opinion, it was a moment in time for Quake. It's, you know, we've had a lot of great packs over the years for Quake, but contemporary packs have been kind of here or there, hit and miss. But this one is one that I think everybody regards as like just what Quake should be, you know, in the, we'll say the 20 teens here. What do you take away from that? That it's like pretty well regarded and everything.
Well, I'm honored to being part of this whole experience. And what I'm taking away is you can't please everyone with a single mod. Like, for example, the projectiles are not everybody's cup of tea, or the jibbing is now way more often occurring than back in Quartz or like ID, like in Vanilla. So some people like this, some not. And what I take away from it is like I'm able to organize and structure my work in a way that I keep an overview of even the most convoluted setups. And this is a thing I had to learn, and now I'm able to, like, being able to structure a map file. Like, you don't want to look around for, oh, where is the fucking trigger relay, like, for this one door, and, like, yeah, you have to get a structure going and some kind of order of managing things, and then you can find around even yourself even the biggest maps. Like, yeah, this is my
so I gotta ask MFX, what's next for you then after all this stuff?
So AD isn't finished, you know, there's maybe a 2.0 coming out. I'm testing various features right now with SOC. I can't disclose any, but they are, of course, great. And yeah,
awesome.
Sock is coding like a for his life. And he added, this will blow your minds.
I can partially vouch for that. And yes, it's mind-blowing stuff.
Yeah. So this is coming up, and I can't disclose it either. But yeah, another legendary mapper is cooking something for quite a while now. But what I've seen already is mind-blowing stuff. You won't believe it.
So there's a lot to be excited for.
Yeah, and I just saw on Twitter, CZG is making a Dark Souls mod for Quake. He was teasing with two screenshots, I guess. I don't know if you've seen it.
I haven't, no, but that sounds really interesting.
Yep.
I saw it kicking around on Discord a couple of days ago also.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. Because I always thought he's finished with Quake 1, but in the end, we always come back to it. I think, yeah. Like even Lunarin puts out maps. Or Scampi. All those guys saying, yeah, I'm done with this. No. They all come back. I mean,
you will always come back.
I mean, we will hear forever. I think, what is 23 years now, and there's still stuff to complete to accomplish with such a basic game. I call it now, but yeah, Quake is never dying, I think.
Hey everybody, this is RC. Just want to remind you to check out my YouTube channel at youtube.com/watchGGRC. And thanks to JCR for coming on the show this week. You can find him on YouTube. Just search for JCR 9001.